Third stanza. Churi and Mia. 1. Until June 1st of 1999, Churi Damascus was the sort of hard-headed woman who'd tell you that most UFOs were weather balloons, and those that weren't were probably the fabrications of people who wanted to get on TV. The Shroud of Turin was some 14th-century con man's trick, and that ghosts, Jacob Marley's included, were either the perceptions of the mentally ill or caused by indigestion. She was hard-headed. She prided herself on being hard-headed and had nothing even slightly spiritual in her mind as she walked down Second Avenue toward her business, an accounting firm called Gutenberg, Firth & Patel, with her canvas carry bag and her purse slung over her shoulder. One of GF&P's clients was a chain of toy stores called Kids Play, and Kids Play owed GF&P a goodly sum of money. The fact that they were also tottering on the edge of Chapter 11 meant El Zippo to Trudy. She wanted that $69,211.19, and had spent most of her lunch hour in a back booth of Dennis's Waffles and Pancakes, which had been Choo Choo Mama's until 1994, mulling over ways to get it. During the last 2 years, she had taken several steps toward changing Gutenberg, Firth & Patel to Gutenberg, Firth, Patel & Damascus. Forcing Kids Play to cough up would be yet another step, a long one, in that direction. And so, as she crossed 46th Street toward the large, dark glass skyscraper, which now stood on the uptown corner of 2nd and 46th, where there had once been a certain artistic deli and then a certain vacant lot, Trudy wasn't thinking about gods or ghosts or visitations from the spirit world. She was thinking about Richard Goldman, the asshole CEO of a certain toy company, and how... But that was when Trudy's life changed. At 1:19 p.m. EDT, to be exact. She had just reached the curb on the downtown side of the street. Was, in fact, stepping up. And all at once... A woman appeared on the sidewalk in front of her, a wide-eyed African-American woman. There was no shortage of black women in New York City, and God knew there had to be a fair percentage of them with wide eyes. But Trudy had never seen one emerge directly from thin air before, which was what this one did. And there was something else, something even more unbelievable. 10 seconds before... Trudy Damascus would have laughed and said nothing could be more unbelievable than a woman flicking into existence in front of her on a midtown sidewalk. But there was. There definitely was. And now, she knew how all those people who reported seeing flying saucers, not to mention ghosts wrapped in clanking chains, must feel, how they must grow frustrated by the entrenched disbelief of people like, well, people like the one Trudy Damascus had been at 1:18 p.m. on that day in June. The one who said goodbye for good on the downtown side of 46th Street. You could tell people, you don't understand, this really happened. And it cut zero ice. They said stuff like, well, she probably came out from behind the bus shelter, and you just didn't notice, or she probably came out of one of the little stores, and you just didn't notice. You could tell them that there was no bus shelter on the downtown side of 2nd and 46th, or on the uptown side for that matter, and it did no good. You could tell them there were no little stores in that area, not since 2 Hammarskjöld Plaza went up, and that didn't work either. Trudy would soon find these things out for herself, and they would drive her close to insanity. She was not used to having her perceptions dismissed as no more than a blob of mustard or a bit of underdone potato. No bus shelter. No little shops. There were the steps going up to Hammarskjöld Plaza, where a few late lunchers were still sitting with their brown bags. But the ghost woman hadn't come from there either. The fact was this. When Trudy Damascus put her sneaker-clad left foot up on the curb, the sidewalk directly ahead of her was completely empty. As she shifted her weight preparatory to lifting her right foot up from the street, a woman appeared. For just a moment, Trudy could see Second Avenue through her. And something else as well, something that looked like the mouth of a cave. Then that was gone, and the woman was solidifying. It probably took only a second or two. That was Trudy's estimate. She would later think of that old saying, "If you blinked, you missed it," and wish she had blinked. Because it wasn't just the materialization. The black lady grew legs right in front of Trudy Damascus's eyes. That's right. Grew legs. There was nothing wrong with Trudy's powers of observation. And she would later tell people, fewer and fewer of whom wanted to listen, that every detail of that brief encounter was imprinted on her memory like a tattoo. The apparition was a little over 4 feet tall. That was a bit on the stumpy side for an ordinary woman, Trudy supposed, but probably not for one who quit at the knees. The apparition was wearing a white shirt, splattered with either maroon paint or dried blood, and jeans. The jeans were full and round at the thighs, where there were legs inside them, but below the knees they trailed out on the sidewalk like the shed skins of weird blue snakes. Then, suddenly, they plumped up. Plumped up. The very words sounded insane, but Trudy saw it happen. At the same moment, the woman rose from her nothing below the knee, 4 feet four, to her all there height of perhaps 5, 6, or 7. It was like watching some extraordinary camera trick in a movie, but this was no movie. It was Trudy's life. Over her left shoulder, the apparition wore a cloth-lined pouch that looked as if it had been woven of reeds. There appeared to be plates or dishes inside it. In her right hand, she clutched a faded red bag with a drawstring top, something with square sides at the bottom, swinging back and forth. Trudy couldn't make out everything written on the side of the bag, but she thought part of it was Midtown Lanes. Then the woman grabbed Trudy by the arm. "What you got in that bag?" she asked. "You got shoes?" This caused Trudy to look at the black woman's feet, and she saw another amazing thing when she did. The African-American woman's feet were white as her own. Trudy had heard of people being rendered speechless. Now it had happened to her. Her tongue was stuck to the roof of her mouth and wouldn't come down. Still, there was nothing wrong with her eyes. They saw everything. The white feet, more droplets on the black woman's face, almost certainly dried blood. The smell of sweat, as if materializing on Second Avenue like this, had only come as the result of tremendous exertion. "If you got shoes, lady, you best give them to me. I don't want to kill you, but I got to get to folks that'll help me with my chap, and I can't do that barefoot." No one on this little piece of Second Avenue. People, a few anyway, sitting on the steps of 2 Hammersholt Plaza, and a couple were looking right at Trudy and the black woman, the mostly black woman, but not with any alarm or even interest. What the hell was wrong with them? Were they blind? Well, it's not them she's grabbing, for one thing, and it's not them she's threatening to kill, for another. The canvas boarder's bag with her office shoes inside it, sensible, half-heels, cordovan-colored, was snatched from her shoulder. The black woman peered inside it, then looked up at Trudy again. "What size are these?" Trudy's tongue finally came unstuck from the roof of her mouth, but that was no help. It promptly fell dead at the bottom. "Never mind, Susanna says you look like about a 7. These are..." The apparition's face suddenly seemed to shimmer. She lifted one hand. It rose in a loose loop with an equally loose fist anchoring the end, as if the woman didn't have very good control of it, and thumped herself on the forehead right between the eyes. And suddenly her face was different. Trudy had Comedy Central as part of her basic cable deal, and she'd seen stand-up comics who specialized in mimicry change their faces that same way. When the black woman spoke again, her voice had changed, too. Now it was that of an educated woman. And, Trudy would have sworn it, a frightened one. "Help me," she said. "My name is Susanna Dean, and I, oh dear, oh Christ." This time it was pain that twisted the woman's face, and she clutched at her belly. She looked down. When she looked back up again, the first one had reappeared, the one who had talked of killing for a pair of shoes. She took a step back on her bare feet, still holding the bag with Trudy's nice Ferragamo low heels and her New York Times inside it.
"Oh, Christ," she said. "Oh, don't that hurt. Mama, you gotta make it stop. It can't come yet, not right out here on the street. You got to make it stop a while."
Trudy tried to raise her voice and yell for a cop. Nothing came out but a small, whispering sigh. The apparition pointed at her.
"You want to get out of here now," she said, "and if you rouse any constabulary or raise any posse, I'll find you and cut your breasts off."
She took one of the plates from the reed pouch. Trudy observed that the plate's curved edge was metal and as keen as a butcher's knife, and suddenly found herself in a struggle to keep from wetting her pants. "Find you and cut your breasts off." And an edge like the one she was looking at would probably do the job. Zip, zoop, instant mastectomy. Oh, dear Lord.
"Good day to you, madam,"
Trudy heard her mouth saying. She sounded like someone trying to talk to the dentist before the Novocaine has worn off.
"Enjoy those shoes. Wear them in good health."
Not that the apparition looked particularly healthy. Not even with her legs on and her fancy white feet. Trudy walked. She walked down Second Avenue. She tried to tell herself, with no success at all, that she had not seen a woman appear out of thin air in front of 2 Hammarskjöld, the building the folks who worked there jokingly called the Black Tower. She tried to tell herself, also with no success at all, that this was what she got for eating roast beef and fried potatoes. She should have stuck to her usual waffle and egg. You went to Dennis's for waffles, not for roast beef and potatoes. And if you didn't believe that, look what had just happened to her. Seeing African-American apparitions and her bag. Her canvas boarder's bag. She must have dropped it. Knowing better. All the time expecting the woman to come after her, shrieking like a headhunter from the deepest, darkest jungles of Papua. There was a Ningley Tum place on her back. She meant a tingly, numb place. But Ningley Tum was how it actually felt, kind of loose and cool and distant, where she knew the crazy woman's plate would bite into her, drinking her blood and then eating one of her kidneys before coming to rest, still quivering in the live chalk of her spine. She would hear it coming. Somehow she knew that. It would make a whistling sound like a child's top before it chunked into her and warm blood went splashing down over her buttocks and the backs of her legs. She couldn't help it. Her bladder let go. Her urine gushed, and the front of her slacks, part of a tray expensive Norma Kamali suit, went distressingly dark. She was almost at the corner of 2nd and 45th by then. Trudy, never again to be the hard-headed woman she'd once fancied herself, was finally able to stop and turn around. She no longer felt quite so Ningley Tum, only warm at the crotch. And the woman, the mad apparition, was gone. 2. Trudy kept some softball practice clothes, T-shirts and 2 old pairs of jeans, inside her office storage cabinet. When she got back to Gutenberg, Firth, and Patel, she made changing her first priority. Her second was a call to the police. The cop who took her report turned out to be Officer Paul Antasi.
"My name is Trudy Damascus," she said, "and I was just mugged on 2nd Avenue."
Officer Antasi was extremely sympathetic on the phone, and Trudy found herself imagining an Italian George Clooney. Not a big stretch, considering Antasi's name and Clooney's dark hair and eyes. Antasi didn't look a bit like Clooney in person, but hey, who expected miracles in movie stars? It was a real world they were living in. Although, considering what had happened to her on the corner of 2nd and 46th at 1:19 p.m. EDT... Officer Antasi arrived at about 3:30, and she found herself telling him exactly what had happened to her, everything, even the part about feeling Ningley Tum instead of tingly numb, and her weird certainty that the woman was getting ready to throw that dish at her. "Dish had a sharpened edge, you say?" Antasi asked, jotting on his pad, and when she said yes, he nodded sympathetically. Something about that nod had struck her as familiar. But right then she'd been too involved in telling her tale to chase down the association. Later, though, She wondered how she could possibly have been so dumb. It was every sympathetic nod she'd ever seen in one of those lady-gone-crazy films, from Girl Interrupted with Winona Ryder all the way back to The Snake Pit with Olivia de Havilland. But right then she'd been too involved. Too busy telling the nice officer Antasi about how the apparition's jeans had been dragging on the sidewalk from the knees down. And when she was done, she, for the first time, heard the one about how the black woman had probably come out from behind a bus shelter. Also the one, this'll kill you, about how the black woman had probably just stepped out of some little store. There were billions of them in that neighborhood. As for Trudy, she premiered her bit about how there were no bus shelters on that corner, not on the downtown side of 46th, not on the uptown side either. Also, the one about how all the shops were gone on the downtown side since Two Hammarskjöld went up, that would prove to be one of her most popular routines, would probably get her on stage at Radio Goddamn City someday. She was asked for the first time what she'd had for lunch just before seeing this woman, and realized for the first time that she'd had a 20th century version of what Ebenezer Scrooge had eaten shortly before seeing his old and long-dead business partner. Potatoes and roast beef. Not to mention several blots of mustard. She forgot all about asking Officer Antasi if he'd like to go out to dinner with her. In fact, she threw him out of her office. Mitch Gutenberg poked his head in shortly thereafter. "Do they think they'll be able to get your bag back, Trudy?"
"Get lost," Trudy said without looking up. "Right now."
Gutenberg assessed her pallid cheeks and set jaw. Then he retired, without saying another word. 3. Trudy left work at 4:45, which was early for her. She walked back to the corner of 2nd and 46th, and although that ningly-tum feeling began to work its way up her legs and into the pit of her stomach again as she approached Hammarskjöld Plaza, she never hesitated. She stood on the corner, ignoring both white walk and red don't walk. She turned in a tight little circle, almost like a ballet dancer, also ignoring her fellow Second Avenueites and being ignored in turn. "Right here," she said. "It happened right here. I know it did. She asked me what size I was, and before I could answer, I would have told her what color my underwear was if she asked. I was in shock. Before I could answer, she said, 'Never mind. Susanna says you look like about a 7. These'll do.'" Well, no, she hadn't quite finished that last part, but Trudy was sure that was what the woman had meant to say. Only then her face had changed, like a comic getting ready to imitate Bill Clinton or Michael Jackson or maybe even George Clooney. And she'd asked for help. Asked for help and said her name was... what? "Susanna Dean," Trudy said. "That was the name. I never told Officer Antasi." Well, yeah, but fuck Officer Antasi. Officer Antasi with his bus shelters and little stores, just fuck him. That woman, Susanna Dean, Whoopi Goldberg, Coretta Scott King, whoever she was, thought she was pregnant. Thought she was in labor. I'm almost sure of it. Did she look pregnant to you, Trudes? "No," she said. On the uptown side of 46th, white walk once again became red don't walk. Trudy realized she was calming down. Something about just standing here with two Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza on her right was calming. Like a cool hand on a hot brow, or a soothing word that assured you that there was nothing, absolutely nothing, to feel ningly tum about. She could hear a humming, she realized. A sweet humming sound. "That's not humming," she said, as red don't walk cycled back to white walk one more time. She remembered a date in college once telling her the worst karmic disaster he could imagine would be coming back as a traffic light. "That's not humming. That's singing." And then, right beside her, startling her but not frightening her, a man's voice spoke.
"That's right," he said.
Trudy turned and saw a gentleman who looked to be in his early 40s.
"I come by here all the time just to hear it. And I'll tell you something, since we're just ships passing in the night, so to speak. When I was a young man, I had the world's most terrible case of acne. I think coming here cleared it up somehow.
You think standing on the corner of 2nd and 46th cleared up your acne? She said.
His smile, only a small one but very sweet, faltered a tiny bit. I know it sounds crazy.
I saw a woman appear out of nowhere, right here, Trudy said. 3.5 hours ago, I saw this. When she showed up, she had no legs from the knees down. Then she grew the rest of them. So who's crazy, my friend?
He was looking at her, wide-eyed, just some anonymous time server in a suit with his tie pulled down at the end of the workday. And yes, she could see the pits and shadows of old acne on his cheeks and forehead. This is true?
She held up her right hand. If I'm lying, I'm dying. Bitch stole my shoes. She hesitated. No, she wasn't a bitch. I don't believe she was a bitch. She was scared, and she was barefooted, and she thought she was in labor. I just wish I'd had time to give her my sneakers instead of my good goddamn shoes.
The man was giving her a cautious look, and Trudy Damascus suddenly felt tired. She had an idea this was a look she was going to get used to. The sign said, "Walk again," and the man who'd spoken to her started across, swinging his briefcase.
Mister?
He didn't stop walking, but did look back over his shoulder.
What used to be here, back when you used to stop by for acne treatments?
Nothing, he said. It was just a vacant lot behind a fence. I thought it would stop, that nice sound, when they built on the site, but it never did. He gained the far curb, walked off up 2nd Avenue. Trudy stood where she was, lost in thought.
I thought it would stop, but it never did. Now why would that be?
She asked, and turned to look more directly at 2 Hammershot Plaza, the Black Tower. The humming was stronger now that she was concentrating on it, and sweeter, not just one voice, but many of them, like a choir. Then it was gone, disappeared as suddenly as the black woman had done the opposite.
No, it didn't, Trudy thought. I just lost the knack of hearing it, that's all. If I stood here long enough, I bet it would come back. Boy, this is nuts. I'm nuts.
Did she believe that? The truth was that she did not. All at once, the world seemed very thin to her, more an idea than an actual thing, and barely there at all. She had never felt less hard-headed in her life. What she felt was weak in her knees, and sick to her stomach, and on the verge of passing out. 4. There was a little park on the other side of 2nd Avenue. In it was a fountain. Nearby was a metal sculpture of a turtle, its shell gleaming wetly in the fountain's spray. She cared nothing for fountains or sculptures, but there was also a bench. Walk had come around again. Trudy tottered across 2nd Avenue like a woman of 83 instead of 38 and sat down. She began to take long, slow breaths, and after 3 minutes or so felt a little better. Beside the bench was a trash receptacle with "Keep Litter in Its Place" stenciled on the side. Below this, in pink spray paint, was an odd little graffito. "See the turtle of enormous girth." Trudy saw the turtle but didn't think much of its girth. The sculpture was quite modest. She saw something else as well. A copy of the New York Times, rolled up as she always rolled hers if she wanted to keep it a little longer and happened to have a bag to stow it in. Of course, there were probably at least 1 million copies of that day's Times floating around Manhattan, but this one was hers. She knew it even before fishing it out of the litter basket and verifying what she knew by turning to the crossword, which she'd mostly completed over lunch in her distinctive lilac-colored ink. She returned it to the litter basket and looked across 2nd Avenue to the place where her idea of how things worked had changed. Maybe forever.
Took my shoes, crossed the street and sat here by the turtle and put them on. Kept my bag but dumped the Times. Why'd she want my bag?
She didn't have any shoes of her own to put in it. Trudy thought she knew. The woman had put her plates in it. A cop who got a look at those sharp edges might be curious about what you served on dishes that could cut your fingers off if you grabbed them in the wrong place. Okay, but then where did she go? There was a hotel down at the corner of 1st and 46th. Once it had been the UN Plaza. Trudy didn't know what its name was now, and didn't care, nor did she want to go down there and ask if a black woman in jeans and a stained white shirt might have come in a few hours ago. She had a strong intuition that her version of Jacob Marley's ghost had done just that, but here was an intuition she didn't want to follow up on. Better to let it go. The city was full of shoes, but sanity. One's sanity. Better to head home, take a shower, and just let it go. Except, something is wrong, she said, and a man walking past on the sidewalk looked at her. She looked back defiantly. Somewhere, something is very wrong. It's... tipping was the word that came to mind, but she would not say it. As if to say it would cause the tip to become a topple. It was a summer of bad dreams for Trudy Damascus. Some were about the woman who first appeared and then grew. These were bad, but not the worst. In the worst ones, she was in the dark, and terrible chimes were ringing, and she sensed something tipping further and further toward the point of no return. Stave. Kamala, come, Key, can you tell me what you see? Is it ghosts or just the mirror that makes you want to flee? Response. Kamala, come, three, I beg you, tell me, is it ghosts or just your darker self that makes you want to flee?